Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Penn State is considering reforms after videotapes showed that Beta Theta Pi pledge Timothy Piazza died after being forced to drink alcohol, falling downstairs, going into spasms for 12 hours before someone called 911. But in an editorial in Time magazine, Occidental College sociology professor Lisa Wade says, "Don't reform, get rid of frats. For good." She joins us. And Professor Lisa, I'm sure you're hearing from young men who say, "But fraternities changed my life for the good."
I'm very sensitive to that. Unfortunately, what we know from hundreds of research studies over decades is that these are, in fact, the most dangerous places on college campuses. If someone is going to be fatally injured on a college campus, if they're going to be disabled on a college campus, if they're going to end up with alcohol poisoning or be sexually assaulted, the chances that it happens at or originates at a fraternity house, that is the most likely case.
Tell us a little bit about the history. It starts in 1863 with the third president of Amherst asking his fellow college presidents what they think of this brand new thing called a fraternity.
Oh, almost unanimously, they thought that fraternities were just about the worst thing that ever had happened to college campuses. They thought that nothing good could come of young men meeting in secret and setting their own agenda. They desperately wanted to get rid of them. They called them un-American. They felt like that they sowed dissension and made non-fraternity members feel bad about themselves and excluded from campus life. And fraternities, from their very inception, have been about rebelling from administration, giving them the middle finger, partying to the point of perilousness. They were born out of 100 years of rioting on college campuses, rioting that was initiated by wealthy students who came to college at a time when college was actually pretty boring and they had to subordinate themselves to administration and faculty. They had much less tolerance for boredom and subordination than did the middle class men who had been going before them. And so they started violent uprisings. And I'm not talking about, you know, protests with clever signs. I mean, they brought arson and firearms. College presidents had to bring in militias. At one point, the college presidents all agreed amongst themselves to expel any student caught rioting. They also agreed not to accept into their own institutions someone that had been expelled from another one. And every single college president at the time agreed to do this except for one guy who was the president of Union College in Schenectady, New York. And he decided to take in all of those violent, wayward sons. And it was at that college in 1825 where the first social fraternity was formed, Kappa Alpha.
Huh. You're reminding us of the class system in America, that a lot of these wealthier, more elite young men in these colleges that were rioting, in part it was because I'm guessing that the teachers, the professors came from a kind of lesser class than they did. So were these early fraternities a way of these wealthy young men cutting themselves off from this campus that they didn't really respect?
Yeah, so in the colonial era, colleges were mostly places where young middle-class men went to become ministers, and their teachers, the faculty members, were also mostly ministers. Wealthy families start sending their sons to college because they are looking around for some sort of thing that with which they can justify the hoarding of wealth and power that they are doing in America. And they decide that the diploma is what they're going to sort of hang this hoarding on. And so they send their young sons, these wealthy sons, to college campuses. And they're looking around, suddenly surrounded by these middle-class people, students that they see as less than them. And that is exactly part of the reason that they start these fraternities, is a way to exclude those middle-class men from their social environments and create places where they can, again, hoard and consolidate their own power and resources.
And in the 1860s, you write, a Yale grad argued that fraternity men were set to manage the entire system of college politics. They wanted to run the show. And a 1900 account from Northwestern University reported that fraternity men conspired to ensure that only they received the scholarships, the leadership positions, and the awards.
That's right. And on some campuses, you couldn't even be in the yearbook if you weren't in a fraternity, because fraternity men controlled the yearbook. They grabbed outsized power on college campuses right from the beginning, and they still have outsized power on college campuses. And that's specifically why people don't imagine that it's possible to get rid of fraternities. When I speak about this on college campuses, that's the reaction I get, is administrators and faculty and students saying that's impossible. And it boggles my mind, because in the 200 years we've had fraternities, we've ended slavery, we've given women the vote, we've gone to the moon. The idea that we don't have the power to stop them, I think, is really quite scary, because it does point to just how much power they still wield.
But they have houses on campus. It's almost like, you know, they have boots on the ground. They have a foothold. It's something that people can actually see. And there are, as you heard, people who absolutely believe in their purpose. NPR recently aired a series, Men in America, in which they interviewed former frat members who said frats gave them mentors. They did charity work. One said frats helped him become a man. And that the horror stories, like at Penn State, are rare.
The horrible stories aren't rare enough to justify keeping these organizations around. I can speak to some of the objections that people have against getting rid of fraternities. One is the charity work argument, that they give a lot of money to charity. I actually looked up the North American Intrafraternity Conference data on this. On average, their members donate $50 a year to charity and spend 9 hours doing charity work. That's on average each year. Mm. So I'm not really overwhelmed by the amount of charity work they're doing. I'm not saying that they don't do it, just that I don't think it's their primary purpose. A lot of fraternity men argue that there is a freedom of association in the United States and that we cannot take away their right to associate. As of now, the courts really aren't holding up this argument. The strongest cases for freedom of association are intimate association, which are families, and expressive association, which is an association that's about a particular goal or belief. So you might imagine a social movement organization would be an expressive organization, or a religion. But the courts aren't holding up that fraternities and sororities count as expressive organizations. They also do mention that it's meaningful to them, and it turns them from boys to men, you might say. And I actually find that a little worrisome. I don't think that it's a good idea to be encouraging young males to identify specifically as men over and against women in this country anymore. So I kind of think that the way in which we sex segregate fraternities and sororities, for the most part, is doing more harm than good. And all these other nice benefits that come from it, friendship, leadership training, study groups, none of these things need a fraternity to happen.
What about the notion, instead of banning them outright, reform, make them better?
If you look at where fraternities came from, that 100 years of rioting, that desire to give a middle finger to administrators and faculty, the interest in partying, and not just partying for a good time, but partying to the point of perilousness, the desire to create a certain degree of danger and risk, that is how fraternities came to be. That is what fraternities have been about. And so to ask them to be reasonable, to take precautions and be careful, is really to ask them to betray everything that they've stood for the last 200 years.
Well,
and I really just think that reform is, it's a fool's errand. And the Timothy Piazza case is exactly why. That fraternity, Beta Theta Pi at Penn, was considered a model fraternity. It was a reformed fraternity. It was a dry fraternity where no alcohol was ever supposed to be served. And yet, we still saw this absolutely grotesque tragedy, an unnecessary tragedy, happen, specifically because the goal was to create a party environment that was dangerous.
Beta Theta Pi also had live-in adult supervision and video surveillance, which is why we're seeing these horrendous videos of what happened to Timothy Piazza.
That fraternity was, quote-unquote, doing everything right, and yet we still saw this tragedy.
That's Lisa Wade. She teaches sociology at Occidental College in Los Angeles. We'll link you to her article in Time titled Why Colleges Should Get Rid of Fraternities for Good. By the way, Lisa is also author of American Hookup, The New Culture of Sex on Campus. Professor Wade, Lisa, thank you so much.
Thank you for highlighting this issue.